Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
You want to talk about a tradition unlike any others, to use the words of Jim Nance, who's calling this Texans-Lions game as we speak. The tradition continues as Bucky Brooks and I get together on another Thanksgiving edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Happy Thanksgiving 2020 version to you, Bucky.
Hey, Dan, it's always a great tradition. It's always great to be with you on a holiday. And this is a great holiday because we get a chance to see football. We get a chance to eat our favorite things, and I know you love Thanksgiving, and I can't wait to debate you on which sides are the best and all of that stuff. And then we get to have these fun conversations, and I know when I am with you, it is always a game show, so I can't wait to play these games that you have on the docket.
I will say this. You know that there's going to be a Brooks and Dunn. You know that that's already done. Like, that is out of the oven, ready to be served, but we've got some more for you. Plus, we have some great guests. In fact, in about 20 minutes, we're going to be going down to Arlington, Texas, as the Cowboys get ready to face Washington. We'll be checking in with Jori Epstein. She covers the Cowboys for USA Today. Plus, we'll get a look ahead to the college football weekend and so much more. But as we start things off, Bucky, first of all, a happy Thanksgiving to everyone listening out there and our crew that's helping us here at Fox Sports Radio. John Ramos, our technical producer, Vincent Close is our executive producer, and David Gascon is at the news desk. So thankful for those guys for taking part of their holiday to spend with us. We can look ahead, but we can also look back when you talk about Tom Brady, Bruce Arians, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What's amazing to me, Bucky, is this is a Buccaneers team that is pretty solidly in the playoff picture. They're sitting there at 7-4, and yeah, they've got the Chiefs coming up this weekend, but when you look at the rest of their slate, it's really manageable. Yet we continue to look at the Buccaneers after they were demolished on Sunday Night Football by the Saints a couple of weeks ago, and then on national TV Monday night against the Rams, Tom Brady did not look good. Where do the problems begin when you're looking at this 7-4 Tampa Bay Buccaneers squad?
Well, I think offensively, what you have is, I mean, you just kind of have an ill-fitting system for the most important player and Tom Brady. So when Tom Brady comes over from the New England Patriots after a 20-year career, what Tom Brady has always been able to do is he is a quick rhythm passer. He really wants to dink and dunk and get the ball to the playmakers and let those guys win. He will push the ball up the field, but when he primarily pushes it up the field, it's down the seams. Well, Bruce Arians is a vertical, he features a vertical passing game. He wants to, no risk it, no biscuit. He wants to have chunk plays. He wants to produce explosive plays, plays that are 20-plus yards. And so you have this, they're not in sync when it comes to how they think the best way for the offense to flow. And then when you add in all of the new pieces to the offense, Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski to go with the holdovers, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Cameron Brate, you just have a lot of moving pieces and parts. And right now, it's not working as well as we thought it would work when these two got together.
We've heard stories in the past, never directly from Tom Brady, never directly from Bill Belichick when they teamed up for 20 years, but of maybe a little bit of friction, maybe just not having the two on the same page. The piece where Tom Brady was frustrated because he wasn't player of the week certain amount of times or at certain times. So we had those things. But that was all in-house and that was all reports and it never came out. What does it say, though, about Bruce Arians, who continues to talk about the quarterback position and the play at that position, which is Tom Brady's position, and just the blunt nature of it? Like, does Arians have to tone it back, especially if we are in year one? Wouldn't that put some at least salve on the wounds of what we continue to discuss in Tampa?
No, I think Bruce Arians is a different personality than Bill Belichick. And Bill Belichick may have called Tom Brady out in team meetings, but he probably – did not do that in press conferences, whereas Bruce Arians is giving an honest answer. If you ask him a question, he's giving you an honest answer. And I think it actually can work well in Tampa with him being so forthcoming with how he feels about how Tom Brady's playing or whatever. By not sugarcoating, what Tom Brady is doing or not doing, everyone in the locker room knows exactly where they stand. They know that, look, he's not going to say one thing and do something else in front of the mic. And so it really enables him to come down on those guys as well. And so I think it's different. I think it may make us uncomfortable to hear people talk about the quarterback. But I'm going to be honest with you. To me, it's refreshing because of the 22 guys that are on the field, the quarterback has always been treated with kid gloves. And it never makes sense to me because he's supposed to be the most important player on the team. Well, if he's the most important player on the team, then he should be treated as such, and he should be under the same level of scrutiny that everybody else is. Bruce Arians is letting Tom Brady know that he can be criticized and critiqued, and this is just different because we're not used to seeing coaches really take this approach.
Yeah, I want to hear from Bruce Arians in just a second here because we have a soundbite from him talking earlier in the week. But I'm actually going to defend Tom Brady in this, and that Tom Brady's play as of late, while not perfect, doesn't need to be the sole reason why Tampa is having the problems. And again, this is a 7-4 team. And it's so weird when you look at what the NFC picture, playoff picture looks like. Again, they're firmly in it. They are firmly in the playoffs when you're looking at what's going to happen in January. But this is a comment, one of many that we've heard from Bruce Arians earlier on in the week, talking about his quarterback and the play at the quarterback position.
Other than the deep ball, I think he's getting confused a few times with coverage. That might be causing some inaccurate balls, but I don't see it at all in practice. We're not missing the deep ball in practice, that's for sure. So it's just a matter on Sundays hitting them.
And this is the point. This is where I want to defend Tom Brady. And Bucky, I, as a sports talk show host, I love to hear comments like that, but also we scrutinize them, and it's maybe something where we're saying we want to talk about this, and we love the back and forth between the two, but it also allows us to take a side, and here's why I'm going to take the side of Tom Brady, because this isn't the first time that this has happened with Bruce Arians, and what I mean by that are quarterbacks in their first years of Bruce Arians' system having some difficulties. And we've seen it with Tom Brady this year. We saw it last year with Jameis Winston. I mean, the 30 interceptions, the football was being turned over. In Carson Palmer's first season with Bruce Arians in Arizona, Palmer threw 24 touchdowns that year and threw 22 interceptions. Tim Couch, going all the way back to the Cleveland days, we're going back that far with these numbers, threw 21 interceptions in his first year with Bruce Arians. And the point is that there seems to be a pattern with this, that even if you're the greatest quarterback of all time, there seem to be problems in adjusting to the system. And I think that when we look at what Carson Palmer did with Arizona, and while it wasn't a long run, the next year was remarkably better, that he had 35 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. It seems that Arian's system takes time with everybody that's starting out, even if you're the greatest of all time. And that's why I can't put it necessarily on Tom Brady. And I don't think it's necessarily fair for Bruce Arians to call Tom Brady out on these situations, considering that there is a history of quarterbacks having trouble adjusting to a system, at least early on.
See, the only thing about that is last year we weren't willing to really go easy on Jameis Winston for the turnovers when the turnovers came up. And with Tom Brady, Tom Brady's on pace to have the most turnovers that he's ever had at a position or whatever. And so, like, when he's turning the ball over, the turnover margin is the quickest way to lose a game. If you're negative, like, the odds are just stacked against you being able to win games. And for Tom Brady, as we're seeing more mistakes from him and we're beginning to see some of the things that he can't do, I think what we're realizing is, like, look, this system was not a perfect fit. And what we have is kind of a tug of war between quarterback and play caller. The quarterback is very comfortable in what he's been able to do for all that time in New England. But if I'm Bruce Arians and if I've had a level of success doing things my way, I'm not so quick to just hand it over to Tom Brady and say, hey, we're just going to put in the New England Patriots playbook. And so because you have this stalemate or this tug of war, we're seeing these difficult moments play out in real time. I think eventually they'll kind of figure it out and figure out the best way to play. But right now we're seeing the growing pains between a player, an older player who is playing in a new system for the first time in his career, and we're seeing a stubborn coach who's not willing to really adapt the system to fit the quarterback and how he plays.
You know what I think kills them? is the lack of a pass catching running back. I think that hurts them so much and hurts Brady for what he feels comfortable with. I mean, when you can throw it to James White 14 times a game, and that's where Brady was in the latter part of his career, it makes things a lot easier. Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette are not that type of guy. I mean, they're bad in when it comes to catching the football out of the backfield, and I think that really hurts Brady as well.
I mean, it does, but I think the other thing is, if you go back and you really study Brady, Brady tends to fade at the end of the season. And so what we're seeing there is what we've seen the last 3 years from him at quarterback. Like, he is a guy that when it gets to December, as an older quarterback, because he's 43 years old, you're not supposed to be playing the game in your 40s, but he's 43 years old, so there's some limitations, and those flaws begin to kind of rear their ugly head during this time of the season. And so what the New England Patriots did to match those flaws is they leaned heavily into the running game, heavily into the I formation, power run game, play action. Bruce Arians' system isn't that. Bruce Arians has, I mean, they feature play action, one of the fewest of any team in the National Football League. I want to say like maybe fifth fewest amount of play action pass attempts coming from that offense. Well, in New England, it was a play-action-heavy offense, because what that does is it lures linebackers to the line of scrimmage. It creates bigger windows. It creates these deep shots. What Bruce Arians is asking Tom Brady to do is to drop back and basically use his arm talent to work over these defenses without any level of deception or misdirection. And so it's a challenge, because you're asking an older quarterback to be at the top of his game physically. And I just don't know if that's a realistic expectation for where Tom Brady is in his career.
I go back to the Saints game, and I have no way to justify the overthrow that Brady made on Monday night that was 20 yards overhead and ends up being picked off. Like, I can't defend that. There's no way that I can do that. But what I can do is go back to the Saints game and also say, to your point about the play action, you also need play action when you actually have a threat to run the football. And when you only attempt four running plays in that game, I don't even care if you're down 14 to nothing. If you're down 14 to nothing after throwing six passes and going three and out in your first two drives, you know what you do? Figure out, all right, let's just try to get something going here. Maybe let's take a little time off the clock. Let's keep our defense off the field. And instead it was throw, 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 and then you end up losing 38-3. So, like, I can't justify his bad throws, but I just don't think that Bruce Arians has put Brady in the best position. And I don't think that throughout the career the quarterbacks have been put in their best positions in the first year of Arians. That's why I'm willing to give Tom Brady a break in all of this, even though some of his passes are indefensible that we see.
Yeah, no, I think both guys are to blame. I mean, I think if we were to split this, if this was the pie, we would split it right down the middle. And so Bruce Arians would have 50% of the pie, and Tom Brady would have another 50% of the pie, because both guys haven't been at their best. Bruce Arians hadn't been at his best in terms of adapting his offense to really fit the talents of the quarterback. The quarterback hasn't been at his best in terms of where he is with his consistency with throwing. Even as he's ringing up these numbers, you know, he's ringing up these numbers, but Tom Brady has what most teams don't have. He has every conceivable weapon that you can have. And I know you cited, hey, maybe they need a pass-catching running back, but he has two Pro Bowl wide receivers. He has two Hall of Fame candidates and Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown coming off the bench. I mean, he has an offensive line that has been rebuilt in front of him. They've tried to run the ball. They went and got Leonard Fournette, who was a first-round pick, to go at Ronald Jones. I mean, they have really afforded him a lot of luxuries, more luxuries than and amenities than he had when he was in New England. And so it's hard for me to say, hey, Tom, it's not really you, it's everybody else. At some point, he has to be able to play and play at a high level, and he hasn't been able to do that consistently for the Bucs.
It reminds me of my freezer, because I have beer-battered fish fillets, I have salmon fillets, I have haddock fillets, and then I just want a burger. Or maybe even on Thanksgiving. Like, I've got all these different types of fish that I love, but when it comes down to it, just give me a hamburger and I don't have it. That's what's happening in Tampa. Get Bucky on Twitter, at Bucky Brooks. Of course, NFL vet, former NFL scout, on the Move the Sticks podcast, NFL Network, high school football coach, all that and so much more. You can find me on Twitter, at Dan Beyer on Fox, as we are sitting in for Doug Gottlieb today. Coming up next on this Thanksgiving edition, by the way, Texans doubling up the Lions 34-17. 16 with 10 minutes to go. Coming up next, we will head to Arlington, Texas, and check in as the Cowboys are set to take on the Washington football team in what's been a devastating week for the Cowboys. We'll talk about it next year on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Dan Beyer. We are sitting in for Doug today on this Thanksgiving Day. A happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. I hope you're safe. I love tradition, Bucky. I joked at the start that you and I get together for a Thanksgiving show every year on Fox Sports Radio. I don't care how bad the Lions are. I always want the Lions to play on Thanksgiving Day. I don't care that they're losing by 24 points. I don't care. I don't want that tradition to end. I love seeing the Lions on Thanksgiving Day, no matter how bad it is. Just never gonna change.
I mean, it does bring back all the memories of my youth, and I understand always seeing them. But man, the thing about this version of the Lions, I just don't know where they go with Matty P. I just don't know what this looks like going forward for the Detroit Lions. This is a team that was expected to be competitive. The demands were that they were gonna be competitive and play meaningful games, and it looks like the Lions just will not be a team that is like that. And for a team that appeared to be trending the right way under Jim Caldwell, things could not have gone worse since they made the move to put Matty P in charge. And so it'd be interesting if they make a move, not only with the head coach, but with the GM, because this would appear to be a very attractive job based on ownership and the way ownership goes about their business. But if I'm a Lions fan, man, I just have to be tired of just the mediocrity that we've seen the last few years.
The Lions right now, again, down by 24. It's one tradition that no matter how bad it is, you can always count on bad Lions football on Thanksgiving. You can always also always count on the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving, as they're going to kick it off with Washington in a little over an hour. Joining us now, covering the Cowboys for USA Today in what has been just an awful week for the Cowboys organization, Jory Epstein joins us here on Fox Sports Radio. Happy Thanksgiving, Jory. Thanks so much for taking time out on this holiday and taking time out with us to talk about Cowboys and Washington today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Dan and Bucky. Happy to be here.
Let's dive into the obvious and what is an extremely difficult week for the Cowboys. We had found out early Tuesday that they had canceled practice, didn't necessarily know what happened, found out that there was a medical emergency with strength coach Marcus Paul, who ended up passing away yesterday. What has been the overall feel and what's already been a short and now devastating week with the Cowboys following the passing of Paul?
Yeah, you bet. We figured it was serious on Tuesday when I'm getting ready to go out to the Star, just about to leave. Jerry Jones had just finished his radio show, and they tell us that practice is canceled, all media availability, and this is on a short week between their Sunday win in Minneapolis and hosting Washington today here on Thanksgiving. And so we figured if they're canceling their only real practice of the week, it must have been serious. But Paul had collapsed at the facility just before 7:30 a.m., emergency medical technicians on the scene to transport him to a local hospital, and sadly he died yesterday evening at age 54. So the Cowboys have MP decals on their helmets, their hats today, and here at AT&T Stadium they'll also have a remembrance for him before kickoff.
You know, in thinking about this, because it's such a shock to lose a teammate, a coach, a friend, a mentor, how are the players handling this? I'm sure they're in shock because of, I mean, look, we're talking about it happened last night, like the finality of it all. Like, what has been the mood like? How the players been in terms of their reaction to this horrific event?
Yeah, I mean, today they are at the stadium, maybe a little more subdued than normal, but going through their warm-ups. But many of them were posting on social media just about their memories of what Marcus Paul taught them as a coach and as a player. I mean, as y'all know, these guys spend a lot of time with their strength and conditioning staff in season, out of season. This is someone they were with every day. They were there when the medical emergency happened. So it's definitely pretty sad, and I imagine they'll be playing for Marcus today.
Jory Epstein joining us here on Fox Sports Radio on the Doug Gottlieb Show. She covers the Cowboys for USA Today. So let's talk about this game, and let's talk about the Cowboys over the last couple of weeks. We know about the Garrett Gilbert start against Pittsburgh, which even in a loss, Jory, seemed to turn things around. Was that a turning point? Was it last week against the Vikings? But what has kind of made this bit of a shift for the way that the Cowboys now are seemingly playing better football?
Yeah, you bet. I'd point to a few things. It's funny. Mike McCarthy's been telling us all season he wants his team to play their best football in November and December. That has been the case so far, though I don't think he wanted them to play quite so poorly in September and October. But yeah, I mean, I think one thing you can point to is this offensive line finally getting a little bit of a stabilization. They've got both their starting tackles out for the season, but they moved all-pro right guard Zach Martin over to right tackle last week, and that was huge for the run game. Ezekiel Elliott finally getting his first 100-yard game of the year. And going back to the Philly and Pittsburgh games earlier in the month, I mean, they really, their defense started to play with better energy. They had actually cut some veterans on one-year deals right around the trade deadline, and it just seems to be kind of addition by subtraction. I think they're finally picking up Mike Nolan's scheme a little bit better. The coaches, on the other hand, are dialing back a little bit what they're asking. So you put that together with Andy Dalton back in this game, and like you said, Garrett Gilbert played decent too, but this offensive cast is finally having someone who can help them maximize their talents to defense, playing with more physicality and understanding of the scheme. And with that, you put together a team that certainly looks better than it did in October.
You know, in thinking about all the things, because there appeared to be a lot of denials from coaches about the effort and energy and how those guys were playing, but it has looked like a different squad. And I know last week there was the story about Mike McCarthy smashing the watermelons and all that other stuff or whatever. How has he been able to get this team to finally play like a lot of us expected this team to play?
Yeah, see, I think the question is Mike McCarthy getting them to finally play like this, or why wasn't he getting them to play like this earlier in the season? But I don't know. I mean, I think he does not look at this as, like someone asked him a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was earlier this week, were they just sick and tired of being sick and tired? And he said, I don't think that. I think that this unit's been improving. He thought the offense started the season the strongest. They had a pretty big setback, and I don't know if it was shock after Dak Prescott's season-ending ankle injury or what, but between that and the defense just really not picking up the scheme, there was a lot of confusion. I do think that this defense also started off with a lot of alphas on the scheme, because I always say I think that they don't have that different players from a couple of years ago, but the way they were gelling together all through 2019 and the beginning of 2020 was not working for them, and they're finally starting to play a little scrappier. So, I mean, yes, Mike McCarthy was smashing watermelons with a sledgehammer in their Minneapolis hotel room last Saturday night, the night before that Vikings game, which he will tell you also, he brought the watermelons from Texas because he didn't think Minneapolis had big enough ones. So let's make sure we're clear on that. But whatever it's doing, and the coaches and the players are much more on the same page than they were early in the season.
Jordy Epstein joining us here. They've got watermelons, just maybe not in November. That's just that's the difference for the land of 10,000 lakes. Jordy Epstein covers the Cowboys for USA Today. You know, I want to get back to just kind of what you're talking about with Mike McCarthy and the players maybe believing more, but I actually want to talk about the top level, because here on Sports Talk Radio, here on the network, when we hear Jerry Jones do his weekly hit in Dallas or Stephen Jones do his weekly hit, they were saying that it was a process. Like, is that what you are seeing? You mentioned Mike McCarthy, you know, mentioning of playing good football late in the season. But do we need to give Jerry and Stephen a break? Because we criticized them. Like, we gave them a lot of slack, or a lot of flack, excuse me. But now should we cut them some slack for actually having belief in their head coach?
You know, I mean, they're still 3-7. And so I don't know how much slack we need to cut them. I think my thing is, that's great that you think your new head coach is a process and it's COVID, and obviously the strangeness of this season and of this year does not make it any easier on a new staff. That being said, Kevin Stefanski figured it out in Cleveland, all right. Matt Rhule is exceeding expectations in Carolina. And I asked Stephen Jones about that a couple weeks ago. Of course, he said he wanted to focus on what was going on in the building. But I think that if you are going to say that you feel like you can contend for a title at the beginning of the year, then sure, your title chances take a hit when you start losing guys like Dak Prescott, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins, Blake Jarwin. I mean, four of their offensive guys gone for the season within the first month. But I still think that what I want to see from a coach to have faith in them is that they are getting their guys to perform exceeding expectations, that they're maximizing their talent. And I don't think the talent was being maximized earlier in the season. I think they're getting closer to that now.
Fair enough.
It is amazing. It is amazing to see how quickly they've turned this thing around.
Jordy Epstein covering the Cowboys for USA Today. We are thankful for you to take time out of your Thanksgiving. Enjoy the game today against Washington, Jordy, and we hope to do it again soon. Appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. Great to talk to you. Thanks, Dan and Bucky.
Get Jory on Twitter at Jory Epstein, Epstein. Get Bucky Brooks on Twitter at Bucky Brooks. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. Hey, Bucky, things are turning around for the Lions, but is it enough to save Matt Patricia's job? We'll talk about that.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
People were up early, Bucky, like myself, wondering about the status of DeAndre Swift of the Lions not playing today. By the way, this is the Doug Gottlieb Show on this Thanksgiving Day. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Dan Beyer in for Doug. And no DeAndre Swift, out with a concussion. And this is a point you talked about, what is happening with Matt Patricia over his time with the Lions when he took over for Jim Caldwell. And there wasn't Jim Caldwell was pretty decent. And when you're a Lions fan, you'll take decent. And the Lions have been anything but. But you want to know, the last 2 weeks, Bucky, have really been what I think are the death nail for Matt Patricia's time in Detroit for two simple reasons. Number one, it took them so long to start DeAndre Swift. And you look at a place like the Chargers, like they needed the team doctor to accidentally intervene for Justin Herbert to take over. But I couldn't imagine, you know, having Tyrod Taylor starting for that team, you know, for 5 or 6 weeks until, you know, Herbert finally took over, when we see how well Herbert's played. When you've seen the flashes that DeAndre Swift has had, heck, Adrian Peterson even said himself that he was surprised when Swift was named the starter, because it should have happened weeks ago, was what Peterson told reporters. It's situations like that that I just don't think bode well for head coaches when you can't even recognize the talent on your own team, let alone how to use some of that talent.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a huge problem, because the head coach is supposed to be the guy who's able to figure out what is going on, fix the problems and the issues, and really put the team in the best situation to win the game each and every week. And a lot of that has to do with personnel deployment, building game plans to really accentuate what your best players do. And so the fact that the Lions have underachieved and some of their top players have not played at maybe their best during this era, I just think it makes it very, very difficult to bring him back when you just don't feel like they're maximizing everybody and everybody's talents each and every week.
To me it was shocking. I mean, and this is nothing against Adrian Peterson. Like, I mean, he's one of the greatest running backs that we've seen. But when AP even says himself that, yeah, Swift should have been starting weeks ago, and I don't know what, like, that to me is shocking. The other point about it, when I brought up the 2 points, was what happened last week in Carolina. And it was because you can look at the Lions and say, well, they're without Swift. They're without Kenny Golladay. They don't have Danny Amendola. You know, they're shorthanded. Trey Flowers isn't there for him on defense. But when you see what happened on the other sideline, you know, we use Jory Epstein just talked about Matt Rhule and the job that they're doing in Carolina and maybe why the Cowboys couldn't do it. When you see that staff in the first year play without Christian McCaffrey, play without Teddy Bridgewater in that game last week, and then to be skunked 20-0, It's those sort of things that I think are brought up, not only as an overall with your own team, but when you look across on another sideline and you're sitting in that box, if you're the GM, if you're the team owner, you're the team president, and you see how that other team is getting by with ease and getting by your team with ease with them being shorthanded, that's just difficult for me to overcome. Now you get a firsthand look at it, so the rest of the country gets to see how bad the Lions are. Yeah, I don't think that the future is very, very long for Matt Patricia in Detroit.
Yeah, no, that's an issue because, look, no excuses, no explanations when it comes to this kind of stuff. How are you able to get your team ready to play? How are you able to overcome whatever adversities that you may have? That's what good coaches are able to do. And the Lions have not had everything go their way, but still they're good enough where they should have a better record than a 4-6 record. And because they have been a sub 500 team for the entire time that Matt Patricia's been there, I just don't know what the building blocks are, particularly when you look at the fact that Jim Caldwell had 3 winning seasons out of the 4 seasons that he was there. And the move to Matt Patricia was designed to get them to the next level, not to get them to take steps back. I don't know how ownership can look at his entire body of work and say that this is trending in the right direction. We want to continue to go forward with Matt Patricia operating the way that he has operated the last couple of years.
I was actually high on Matthew Stafford entering this season, because when you look at what he did in the first half of last year before he got hurt, you're like, geez, the guy was on on pace for his best career season when it comes to taking into account yardage, touchdown passes, the lack of interceptions. Stafford had a great first half, then was lost for the rest of the year with a back injury. And you're saying, all right, awesome. We'll just carry it over. Kenny Golladay was dinged up early on in the season, but you didn't have that carryover with Stafford. Is only, you know, he's a bit dinged up himself, but there just wasn't that carryover. And yeah, to your point, they haven't gotten better. They haven't gotten better since Jim Caldwell, and they haven't gotten better from a season ago. And I think that's likely to cost Matt Patricia his job. Lions have the football back, down 16 with under 4 minutes to go in the contest. One of two, not three, but one of two games on this Thanksgiving Day. Get Bucky on Twitter, at Bucky Brooks. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. Coming up next, while Matt Patricia may not be long for Detroit, who would you want as your football coach? We answer that question next year on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Dan Beyer. We are in for Doug Gottlieb today. Find Bucky on Twitter at Bucky Brooks. You can also find him on the Move the Sticks podcast, NFL Network. You can find him on a coaching sideline. When you're good, are you playing football this winter? Is that the plan, Bucky?
That is the plan. The plan right now is for us to start up in January. We'll see if we stay with that timeline. But hopefully sometime we'll get clearance here in L.A. and Southern Cal to be able to play, because I know there are a lot of kids out there that just miss the game, they miss the camaraderie and the sportsmanship and all the things that come along with it. So hopefully the numbers will go down and guys will have an opportunity to play.
I am not coaching. I'm Dan Beyer alongside Bucky today. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. And if you go to one of Bucky's games, do not tailgate, because outdoor dining is not allowed in L.A. County. Let's go over to the news desk and play a game.
This is Game Time.
It's Game Time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
David Gascon is at the desk. Vincent Close is our executive producer. John Ramos, our technical producer, hanging out as well. What's going on, Dave?
Guys, we've got to do a little something-something here. We call...
I feel a draft.
How about that? I'm a little feel... A draft time. How about that?
Game All right.
Time is draft time here. Guys, we're going to actually run through something here in the National Football League. We're going to go through a draft. Dan Beyer, Bucky Brooks, John Ramos, Vincent Close, and myself, we are going to draft NFL head coaches you'd want to play for. 2020 edition, though, of course.
All right.
So they can't be any Vince Lombardi. They can't be anyone from back in the past.
Sure.
We're going with only the guys that we see right here and right now.
I think John Ramos and I would be fighting over Chuck Knox with the Rams and Seahawks, that's for sure.
That'd be really good.
Good to know that Ground Chuck is not available. All right, so what's our draft order that we've got?
Yeah, so we're going to do it to a snake style as well. So we'll start with Bucky going number one, followed by Ramos, then Dan Beyer, then Vince, then myself, and then we'll snake back. We'll go myself, Vince, Dan, Johnny Ramos, and then Bucky Brooks. You guys ready to go?
Yeah, let's do it.
We got 32 coaches on the board. Gentlemen and Mr. Bucky Brooks, you are on the clock. Who would you select as your number one coach that you'd like to play for here in 2020?
Okay, so now this is not the best coach, but this is who I would like to play for.
Correct.
Yes.
Just for clarity. Okay, so if I just want to pick a guy that I want to play for, I want to play for Mike Tomlin. And the reason why I want to play for Mike Tomlin is because he's that mix of a player's coach while still being a disciplinarian. He finds a way to always win. He hasn't had a losing season in his career. So I'm going to go with the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin.
It's pretty damn good.
John, did he take away your pick?
He did.
Trade up for Mike Tomlin?
He did not. And, Matt Patricia gets – no, I'm joking. It's not Matt Patricia. Sean McVay. Sean McVay is the quintessential coach's coach. Hey, that's okay if I'm a homer with Sean McVay. He always loves his players when they win and always takes the coaches when they lose. And I like that about it. Plus, he makes you interested in playing. So I'll take Sean McVay as my number two pick in the draft.
Yeah. I may take Matt Patricia because he plays bad players, and I'd be a bad player. So that means I get some playing time. Heck, I may start at running back if it's up to Matt Patricia for the first half of the season. No, I am going to take Pete Carroll. Even at his age, keeping things fun in Seattle, you continue to win. I am going Pete Carroll in is chewing gum.
See, and I know why, too, Dan. Because he'd probably be your head coach in college football and then transition you to the National Football League where he could coach you there, too.
Yes. Get that benefit, that's you know? Right. He knows my strengths because he recruited me.
There you go. Vince, you're up next.
All right, so my two top picks got taken already, so I'm going to go with a little bit of a wild card here. I'm going to go with Cliff Kingsbury.
Oh, my.
I like him. A little bit innovative. Didn't have the greatest college success in the world, but, you know, he's making it happen in Arizona, and they're a fun team to watch. So I think I'd like to play for Cliff. He's also got that really nice house.
Oh, my God.
I'll go hang out in that backyard.
Yeah, he's going to invite you over.
Yeah,
you
know? Maybe. Scottsdale, Arizona it is. Guys, I'm going to go a little typical on this, but old school. I will go with the head coach known as the Hoodie, Bill Belichick. I will go with him for as good as I guess you could see some of the guys that we've had in yesteryear. Bill Belichick is a historian. He's coached in the 80s. He's coached in the 90s. He's coached in the 2000s. And I appreciate the love that he's had for the game of the National Football League and what it's brought to him. And he's always adapted in style. And because of that, I will take him. He's a proven winner and arguably the best coach in the National Football League. Going away from him, I will take the other Harbaugh. I'll take John Harbaugh. Much like his brother, he is also a winner. He's performed well, and he adapts to his player personnel, whether it's offensively or defensively. I think he is a player's coach. He's got the same drive as his brother, just not as big of a hard ass. I will take John Harbaugh.
Oh, interesting. That's two good picks. Bucky, this draft so far, you think it's going to form, or was there any shocker that you saw?
Well, I'm thinking – the guy with the Super Bowl champions is still available, Andy Reid, right?
Oh, well, yeah, he right. could be. No, we'll
not anymore.
Oh!
I'm taking the Super Bowl, the most recent Super Bowl champ, Andy Reid. You know, just going back to even his punt, pass, and kick days, he's just got a desire to just play football. He loves his players. He loves, you know, coaching the game. And there's just some – I think it would be a really – it'd be a pleasure to have him as my coach.
I would like to I was thinking about Doug Peterson because I think Doug Peterson would fight anybody that criticizes his players. Like, he seems like he's ready to go. But I'll tell you what, they seem to have a good time in Tennessee. Give me Mike Vrabel at number 8. I think I'd love to play for a guy who seems to be quite a player's coach. So I'll take Vrabel at 8.
All right. Jeremy Ramos?
Well, I don't know why Gase gets so much, you know, problems, but I'm not taking Adam Gase. That was a joke. I am going to take Sean Payton of the New Orleans Saints. I mean, hey, he's won a Super Bowl. He's seems like he's a players type coach. And plus, he has Drew Brees, and now he has Taysom Hill, and he has Jameis Winston. So he's got a nice little run there. I'll take Sean Payton as number eight pick.
All right, Bucky, wrap this draft up.
Well, man, I get a chance to take one of my old coaches, so I'm going to go with John Gruden. I'm going with John Gruden with the Vegas Raiders because the Raiders are back. And if you looked at the game, and even though they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs, I think everyone knows that the bully is coming. And so I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of the renaissance of the Raiders, the greatness, just win, baby, in the words of the late Al Davis, I am all the way in with John Gruden.
All right.
I thought that was it, right?
That is it. But okay. to recap, Bucky took Tomlin and Gruden. Dan, you had Pete Carroll, and you also had Mike Vrabel. Ramos, you had Sean McVay and Sean Payton. Vince, you had Cliff Kingsbury and his front yard, and also Andy Reid, and myself, Belichick, and John Harbaugh.
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is game time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Let's be honest. Vince took Cliff Kingsbury because Vince is sick of being the hottest guy in the room. That's why he did it. He wanted the pressure off of him, so he's like, bring on Cliff Kingsbury. I've had enough. Get Bucky on Twitter, at Bucky Brooks. You can find me at Dan Beyer on Fox, and you can always tweet us at Fox Sports Radio. It is a Thanksgiving edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show, and could there be a change at quarterback in the city of brotherly love? We talk about it next here on Fox.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.